Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Wednesday morning, August 5th. 55 degrees here in Old Town Park City. 50 degrees in the Heber Valley. We've got smoky, hazy skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your hump day forecast here for the Wasatch Back. We're going to be looking at another day with lots of sunshine, but it's definitely going to be that hazy, smoky sunshine out there as we continue to see more smoke and haze coming in from those wildfires off to the north and west of us. Now, that means that we're going to be seeing reduced air quality and visibility at times as well, so be aware of that. Code orange air quality for today, which means unhealthy for sensitive groups. We'll continue with this story as we go into tomorrow as well, so expect similar conditions for your Thursday. Now, high temperatures for today, still on the cooler side of things. Mid-80s for your Wednesday afternoon in Park City. We'll see those highs in the low 90s in the Heber Valley, but even with the smoke and sunshine, we're going to start to boost those temperatures up on your Thursday. So high temperatures will be climbing to around the low 90s in Park City on your Thursday, mid to upper 90s in the Heber Valley. And it continues to warm up by the time we get towards your Friday. I've got high temperatures in the low to mid 90s in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures in the lower 100s in the Heber Valley, and we'll stay with that way heading into the weekend. Look for a few extra clouds to build in, so we'll call it partly cloudy skies for your Saturday. High temperatures, well, they'll be in the low to mid 90s for us in Park City. Highs will be in the lower 100s in the Heber Valley. The good news is the core of this heat wave will break down as we head into the second half of the weekend, so we'll start noticing temperatures going in a different direction. So high temperatures on your Sunday will be in the low 90s, will be in the mid to upper 90s in the Heber Valley. We'll also notice with those extra clouds, a little bit more moisture sneaking in by Sunday afternoon, so there will be a chance of an isolated or spotty shower or thunderstorm as we go into your Sunday afternoon. A little better chance of some of those isolated showers and storms returning to the Wasatch Back as we head into your Monday and Tuesday. And that, of course, is when we'll help to cool those temperatures, I think, back down into the mid to upper 80s for highs in Park City and low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Solid Waste Director Tim Loveday with details on the new regional recycling program. Later on, from the Kimball Arts Festival, Festival Director Hillary Gilson is joined by Natalie Hall, the Volunteer Director, with a preview of this week's annual Arts Festival. And from the People's Health Clinic, CEO Mari Lining and founder Dr. John Hanrahan with an update on the clinic's need for more space as well as news about their upcoming fundraiser. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life. Today, Michael Dowling highlights a different side of leadership, one where many great leaders unfortunately go unseen. He'll talk about its new book, The Unlikely Leader, which breaks down the biases that keep capable people from getting the recognition and promotions they deserve. Then Dr. Beth Ricanti, author of The Braided Prescription, shares how a weekly ritual of braiding challah transformed her health and how she rediscovered seven traditional practices that offer great benefits for our mountain life. All of that coming up on the Mountain Life, of course, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10. Taking a look at some local news now, Eastern Summit County planners may vote on a zoning proposal for Browns Canyon tomorrow that could allow thousands of new homes. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the public can weigh in as well.
Residents are expected to weigh in on a proposal to bring thousands of homes to the mostly rural and industrial Browns Canyon Thursday. Ivory Homes is spearheading the development on behalf of members of the Garf and Rogers families, but Summit County does not have zoning that would allow it. Most of Browns Canyon is zoned for one home per 80 acres. Ivory's development would include 2,300 to 3,000 homes on 400 acres. Despite the project's potential scope, Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes says the question right now is actually quite narrow. Should Summit County change its code to make more housing possible? Even if the answer is yes, the county could still deny Ivory's application later on.
They're trying to create a zone. Having created the zone, they will then have to go through the application to apply for the zone.
Thursday evening, the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission will accept public comment before possibly forwarding the proposed zone to the Summit County Council for a vote. In the run-up to the hearing, Commissioner David Darcy has said residents have been more concerned about issues than process. And the two biggest issues are traffic and water.
I mean, I'd love to talk water. I could talk water all and go through the math and everything else on water, but I'm not sure if I think the more important part is did we put everything in there, the verbiage that we really would want to see in order to get comfortable with what this new code says for this new zone.
Even though it's not what the Planning Commission is voting on, he says water is the elephant in the room. Barnes says that's almost inevitable in rural Summit County.
The issue in any development on the east side is infrastructure, water and wastewater provision being the two critical ones. And should we, for example, be approving a zone on the promise that, well, we have paper water rights, but we haven't drilled any wells yet.
Ivory Homes has commissioned a well siting study and the drilling of a test well. It estimates that 3 or 4 wells will be needed to support up to 3,000 homes. By comparison, 3 wells in the Park Meadows area account for roughly half of all of Park City's water. Ivory Development President Chris Gamvroulis said in June it's in his company's interest to conserve water once it's flowing.
Water's super expensive to drill for and store and buy the rights for. So our intent is to drive down use here per door on the average, on the overall, to about 0.3 acre feet per home. Which is a very low water use.
He says the development agreement governing another Ivory project, Park City Heights, mandates less water-intensive landscaping. Ivory representatives have expressed a willingness to mandate drip irrigation instead of sprinklers in Browns Canyon and to explicitly ban golf courses. The company has named the development Lost Creek. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Summit County has announced it will be installing 4 new recycling drop-off locations across the county. And in the studio with details, I have Summit County Solid Waste Superintendent Tim Loveday. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
So what prompted the county to open these?
Well, we're always about recycling, but we're in a situation now where we're running out of space at the 3 Mile Canyon landfill. And yes, we have the current cell that we just finished. That'll get us another 17 years. And we have some space we can go beyond that. But it's amazing how fast time flies. So if we're going to be able to extend the life of that landfill, which is very important financially to the county and its residents, we've got to start now. We can't wait to the last minute.
Yeah. How much of this was driven by Recycle Utah's kind of transition out of its longtime Woodbine Way location?
Yeah, Recycle Utah, and we know they're going to be down for a little while they work on a new facility. That was a big push towards this. We're in a situation where we have to do an annual or a solid waste management plan every 5 years. We have to do that and turn that into the state. But that also coincided with Recycle Utah and their relocation, and they've been a big partner for us. They've been doing about 1,600 tons of diversion a year for us, and that's a really important thing. So, you know, in order to try to make up for some of that loss while they're down probably a year and a half, the remote sites seemed like the logical thing. Then the solid waste management plan came into play, and so it's all being combined up now.
Okay, so are you working on that new 5-year plan, or you're just following what you've got at this point?
No, we are working on that 5-year plan. In fact, it'll be presented to council in August, and hopefully they will adopt it. It includes a lot of what we had five or six years ago when we did it. We've made a lot of changes because we've learned a lot since then. So we'll get that in front of council, and that includes these remote drop-off sites and about 13 different strategies to reduce waste.
All right. So these drop-off locations, are they ready for use?
They are up and running. We have one over at Ledges. They're near the Ledges Center in Colville. We have installed one in Camas, one at the Ecker Hill, and we also have increased our ability to take co-mingle to the 3 Mile Canyon landfill.
All right. Now, there used to be one near Jeremy at the park and ride, so that's moved over to Ecker?
That's moved over to Ecker. In fact, most people who have been recycling know that Recycle Utah's glass collection is there. Our co-mingled dumpsters are right beside them, and they've been out there about 3 weeks now, and we've been filling them up.
Okay, so why were these locations chosen? I mean, I guess what factors were most important?
Well, we took a lot of information from residents. We had over 800 residents respond to a survey we did, and we met in person with a number of folks as well at different events. And we listened to what they wanted, and they want convenience as a bottom line. Curbside is great, but not everybody has access to curbside, especially in some locations. And then our curbside bin is, you know, every 2 weeks, 95 gallons, so sometimes that overruns. So we looked at the commute routes, where people were going, like the Camas one. Yes, that's in Camas, but everybody from Francis is going to the grocery store and has to drive by there. So that's an easy one for them to drop off there, as well as Oakley. Three Mile Canyon, we were already there, up and operating with a lot of other recyclables, so we just added glass and commingled there, because people come in to drop off bigger stuff, they can bring their recycles as well. And of course, Ecker is a high density area, and so that one's going to be probably our biggest driver on volume. It has been so far. And then we intend to add more. This is, the Colville one is, it's a little bit hidden. We're going to have to get some signage so people can see that a little bit easier. But we're going to add still another one over in Silver Summit. We still want one in Park City. We're working with Park City Sustainability to pick out a site on that one. And ultimately, the mayor and council at Hennifer were very receptive, and they want one over there. We just got to find a piece of property.
Okay. So what's going to be available to recycle? I mean, will people still have to come into Park City to recycle certain items?
Absolutely. We've designed this thing to be in addition to Recycle Utah. It's definitely not a replacement. We're at these sites, we're taking co-mingle, which is basically your paper, plastics, those kind of things. Same thing you put in your curbside program. We've added glass, which is something the public asked for, so we were being responsive to that. But Recycle Utah still does about 50 things that we can't take at these remote sites. They've got the batteries, styrofoam, all these type things. So by no means a replacement for Recycle Utah, it's just an addition to their operation.
Yeah, so when you talk co-mingle, that means everything can go in at once? There's not separate bins?
Yeah, there's not separate bins. It's exactly the same thing that you're putting in your curbside cans now. It's plastics, paper, cardboard, those type things. The only thing that's going to be changing as we move forward, we're going to have separate bins for broken down cardboard. That way we can bale that here locally and save costs on that. Those dumpsters are ordered. They should be in a couple of weeks. So you'll see those start showing up at these sites as well.
Okay, what I can't though drop off in my curbside is no plastic bags and no glass. So you will take those, huh, in these commingle areas?
Yeah, we'll be able to take the glass, the film type plastics like plastic bags, trash bags, those kind of things. Those still need to either go to Recycle Utah or to Smith's, Walmart, those type places. In fact, we are launching a program called I forgot its name, it slips me. Anyhow, it's a recycle program. You'll be able to go into this program, Recycle Coach, that's the name of it. You'll be able to go into Recycle Coach, and you'll be able to click, if you've got a plastic cup, it'll tell you where you can take that. So that was another thing that came back during the survey. We had a number of people that simply were confused about what could go into recycle and what couldn't. So Recycle Coach is going to be able to cure a lot of that.
Okay, so what are you anticipating? I mean, do you expect to see now more people recycle, making it a little bit more convenient?
I hope so. I mean, our target, and it's hard to estimate tonnages and that kind of thing, but our goal for this year, between the co-mingled recycle curbside program, these remote sites, and what we're doing at Three Mile Canyon, we're hoping to divert at least 7,500 tons this year. And of course, that'll just expand as we roll out more. And then ultimately, when Recycle Utah gets their new home and is up and running, I expect that they'll be taking in a lot more than they have been too.
Okay. That's almost like 4 or 5 times more than Recycle Utah is collecting then.
Yeah, the county hasn't done a good job of talking about how much we already recycle, but our curbside program, before we did anything, was taking in about 2,600 tons a year. And then we take in anywhere from 600 to 700 tons of metal, and then we also recycle tires and refrigerators. There's a lot being diverted. And then we started a pilot program this past year where we're diverting the green waste, or it's really brown waste, everybody calls it green waste, but tree branches, those kind of things. We're not letting those go into the Three Mile Canyon landfill because we just got to protect that space. So the small loads we're collecting there at Three Mile and trucking them over to Hennifer, and then we have a company that is coming in to chip those. And then after they chip it, they haul the chips back to Salt Lake and make colored mulch out of it. So that's diverted from both landfills at that point.
All right. So how often will these containers be emptied? And I guess you're going to monitor, I guess, to see whether more capacity is needed, or do you even have space for more capacity?
We are looking for space for more capacity. And at the existing sites, we have space to add more dumpsters if we need to. But right now, we're running this through our curbside contract with Republic Services. So they're using front loads. Those trucks are going past these sites already anyhow. So they're able to go in and dump those pretty much on an on-call basis. This is brand new. We're only 3 weeks in. So we're experimenting right now on how often we're going to have to empty those. We're finding that Ecker is going to have to be very often because they're filling up. And those of you who have been dropping off of Ecker, you've been doing a great job. The boxes are broke down. Everything's tight in there. We're getting a lot of recyclables in those cans. And along those lines, at all the sites, breaking down the boxes is huge. EPA has studied this, and we have looked at it as well. Not breaking down cardboard boxes occupies about 70% of the airspace in one of those bins. So please, please, please break down those cardboard boxes.
All right. So what measures, I guess, are in place to kind of, you know, prevent a dump site happening or even illegal dumping at these sites?
Yeah, illegal dumping has already been a problem. It didn't take long. Pretty much the first 24 hours at one site resulted in a contractor dumping pallets and filling the recycled can with wood. We are at some of the sites, we've already installed cameras, and we have budgeted and are asking council for approval to have funding to put cameras at all the sites. That's a pretty serious deal. I hate being the trash cop for the county, but that falls on my shoulders, and we'll continue to do that. We have a dumpster ordinance in place already with the county that council passed a number of years ago, and the minimum fine, first offense, is $250. And we send those out on a pretty regular basis.
Okay, based on your license plate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, like, broken glass. I mean, that's inevitable, I'm guessing, yeah.
Yeah, broken glass and litter. I mean, you can't kid yourself. Anytime you're dealing with waste like this, there are going to be some challenges. So what we've done is hired a full-time person just to take care of these sites. So he's circling the sites. We've got him a vehicle. He's checking the cans, pulling out what he can if there's contamination, and cleaning things up and keeping an eye on them. He's also the individual who does most of the baling of the cardboard at Three Mile Canyon.
Okay. Now, are these intended as permanent sites?
These are intended as permanent sites. You may hear me refer to them as pilot, but that's only because it's trying to figure out how often we're going to empty these and how many we actually need. Assuming these are successful, and we're going to do everything that we can possible to make these successful, we'll be rolling out more of these sites as we move forward in the future.
Yeah, I mean, are you considering perhaps just different or just maybe certain hours that, you know, that you could somehow close them off to prevent some of the illegal dumping happening?
We would like to be able to do that right now. They're unfenced, and that's in the budget for next year, to be able to fence these and lock these. Right now they're open 24/7, 365. As much as we can do that, we'll try to keep this as convenient as possible for the public, but there may be some sites that we have to lock down.
Yeah, and how closely are you working with Recycle Utah as they kind of make plans for their transition?
Yeah, we work with Recycle. I'm the board liaison for the county for Recycle Utah, so we're in contact with them, it seems, almost on a daily basis. I think that they have a really good plan right now. They're rolling it out. I think they have a lot of confidence moving forward. The new director is doing a great job. He's focused on fundraising, which they need, because they're going to have to build a facility, and we're very pleased with that partnership right now.
Yeah, and I guess kind of looking 5 years down the road, I mean, what does the county's ideal recycling system look like? I mean, is that really between you and Recycle Utah taking, or I mean, will we see, I guess, increased curbside pickup, or does that go away when we have all of these other opportunities?
I don't see curbside pickup going away. We're only doing it every other week now. And a lot of folks have asked us to switch that to weekly, but it would cost, I mean, the initial rollout to go to weekly would be almost $1.5 million a year. It's just not within reason for us to do right now. Recycle Utah is key in moving forward, because they collect so many things that we don't, or there is such small quantity that we can't, but it's very important to collect those, to keep those out of the landfill. We've also have been working with a relationship with Park City Climate Fund. The Climate Fund's been working on food waste. Food waste is absolutely critical to divert from the Three Mile Canyon landfill as we move forward. People don't realize how much food waste actually goes in that landfill. We had an engineering study done, and it turns out by tons, 26% of what goes in a Three Mile Canyon landfill is compostable food waste. Now, that's just 26%, but the additional problem is that food waste is very light. It doesn't compact. It just moves around. So in actual using up airspace, the usable volume of the landfill, it occupies almost 50% of the usable space in the landfill. So we've been two years in a row, we've given grants to the Climate Fund. They've been working on a curbside collection program. It's been an opt-in program, but it's been very successful so far. And we continue to look long-term, and when I say long-term, this is a couple of years down the road and better, at how do we manage that food waste? Can we ever bring that into our curbside program ourselves? And more importantly, assuming we collect it, what do we do with it? You know, right now we don't have any place to take it in Summit County. It was going over to Browns Canyon to spoil the soil, but that operation is no longer functioning. So that food waste has to go to the digester in Salt Lake. And unfortunately, that has to be a very, very clean waste stream. Composting allows for a lot more contamination and also allows for compostable utensils and plates, that kind of thing. So as part of the solid waste management plan, we are seriously looking at the what it would take to do a compost facility in Summit County. And part of the grant to the Climate Fund this year is to do a feasibility study for that.
Okay. Tim, anything else you wanted to know?
I just want everyone to know that that we're doing everything we can, but government can't solve all the problems on our own. This program is 100% dependent upon the residents. If you want it to be successful and make us successful, that's going to save a lot of money. The 10 years we're trying to extend on the life of the landfill represents over $50 million. That's a lot when you divide that up amongst a relatively small population. So please keep these sites clean. Please, look on the signs, put in the appropriate recyclable materials into these dumpsters and help us make this thing successful.
Okay. Tim, appreciate your time. And we'll make sure that we link those locations when we post the story.
Thank you.
Tim Loveday is the Summit County Solid Waste Superintendent. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the 57th annual Kimball Arts Festival kicks off Friday night with Locals Night. It continues Saturday and Sunday in Park City's Main Street. And in the studio with details, I have Arts Festival Director Hillary Gilson along with Volunteer Manager Natalie Hall. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah, so Hillary, you guys all set?
Yeah, just about. We're starting all of our installs around Main Street, up in the Wasatch Brew Pub lot and over in Bob Wells today. So yeah, things are moving.
Okay, yeah, I can see it blocked off already there. Talk to us a little bit what people can experience there during the festival.
Yeah, absolutely. So this year, like you said, is the 57th annual Park City Kimball Arts Festival. It's August 7th through 9th, Friday through Sunday. We've got about 195 juried artists from across the country. We had more than 1,200 applicants, so that's about the top 16% of the acceptance rate. We've got artwork from across 13 different mediums. We have two live stages or live music stages. One is at the top of the street. We've kind of rebranded that space to Après Alley this year. We're really excited about it. We've got a lot of beverage partners and culinary partners up there in addition to the music program by Mountain Town Music. And then we have our main stage down on Heber Ave in the Spirit Garden with another bar, some cool sponsor tents, and Coca-Cola products for sale down there as well. We have our interactive art activities as well on the street. This year at Miners Park is the Studio on Main. So that is going to be the Young Artist Academy student art tent as well as our Clay student art tent. And then on Saturday, you'll be able to experience the Wheel Try It activity, which is always really fun. And then on Friday and Sunday, we have some partner nonprofit tents up there as well. And then on Heber Avenue, we have our Creation Station. So that's more youth-based programming that connects back to our exhibition at the Kimball Arts Center. So overall, tons of artistic elements up and down Main Street this year. And then if you're looking for a more elevated experience, we have our VIP lounge at the Kimball Terrace for both VIP pass holders and weekender pass holders. So yeah, just tons of fun throughout the weekend.
Yeah, it sounds like the VIP passes have sold out.
Yes, they have sold out this year. So if you are interested in that for next year, definitely plan ahead. But yeah, it's a great space, kind of a skybox view of everything, air conditioning, which is huge. So definitely plan ahead for those for next year if you weren't able to get one this year.
Okay, and as I mentioned, Locals Night is Friday night. What do locals need to know about getting their free ticket?
So locals need to know that pre-registration is required. You can do that through our website. All you have to do is enter in your Summit County address, and that will kind of unlock the free tickets for you. If you have any questions, you can always email info@kimballartcenter.org or give our front desk a call. But it's a pretty simple process for locals this year.
Okay. And you also offer that to second homeowners as well?
We do, yep. So anyone with a Summit County zip code address is eligible for these tickets. And then in addition to that, we also give out Locals Night tickets to Main Street employees regardless of their residency.
All right. And the pre-registration makes it a lot easier. Otherwise, you're going to be in line trying to,
exactly,
to do this.
Exactly, yep. And we will have QR codes at the gate. So in case you do forget to do that, you know, we will have the QR codes. But just a fair warning, you know, lines can get a little long on that Friday night. So it goes a lot quicker if people pre-register.
All right. And then if people want to return, they would buy a ticket for Saturday or Sunday?
Yes. So we have daily tickets for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And yeah, so if you get a locals pass for Friday night, you can definitely return on Saturday or Sunday. They're $15 for adults, $7 for kids, and children who are five or under, they get in for free.
Okay. This is a fundraiser, which is why there's a charge.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of Kimball Art Center's largest programs throughout the year. Ticket sales benefit our year-round activities. And something that's really cool about our Arts Fest is that our artists retain 100% of their proceeds, 100% of their earnings from their art sales. So I think a lot of people think like if they purchase an artwork from an artist on the street, that's benefiting the Kimball. In a sense, it is, because we exist to benefit artists and to support artists. However, we do not receive any of that revenue. That goes directly to supporting those artists. So ticket sales is the number one way to support the Art Center. And then, of course, if you purchase, you know, a drink at the bar or a non-alcoholic drink at the concession stands, that goes towards our revenue as well.
Okay, and you mentioned, you know, what's new for 2026 is the what did you call it? The
Apparee Alley. Yeah.
All right, and how is that going to be different from what we've seen in years past?
Yeah, so previously, we had like a 10 by 20 bar area that had all of our beverage partners there at the, you know, at the same area. This year, it's broken out into every one of those bar partners has their own 10 by 10 tent. So it's more of like, think of like a wine festival experience where you get to go to those providers, have a one-on-one experience. A lot of them have some really special offerings, so there'll be different beverage offerings than Heber Avenue Bar. So for example, High West is going to be doing a tasting room experience where you'll be able to taste some whiskeys, have some barrel-aged cocktails. And then down at Heber Bar, those are the more like top shelf, you know, like your whiskey lemonades and things like that that everybody looks forward to. But yeah, Apparee Alley, it's completely different menu than Heber Ave, so definitely make sure to check that out. And really importantly, we have a large shade tent up there this year. It's going to be a 20 by 40 foot shade tent. So yeah, we've listened to the feedback and we're excited to build that into this year's festival.
Okay. Make sure you have your ID.
Yes. Yes.
Natalie, you are in charge of the volunteers. I mean, it doesn't run without help. How many volunteers do you have need of every year?
Yeah, we have this year about 250 volunteers across about 500 shifts. So yeah, this festival, as you say, would not happen without the work of our incredible volunteers. And it takes many, many people to make that happen.
Yeah. Are you still looking for volunteers?
Yeah, we are always looking for more hands. During the weekend, the biggest needs are still the entry gates. That's always the biggest one to fill. There are 12 points of entry to the festival, so we want to make sure that everyone is welcomed in as efficiently as possible, so that is a big one. And there are a couple other ones, but yeah, if you go on our website, there is a volunteer tab to go take a look at everything that's still available.
Okay, and you take good care of your volunteers. You have a lounge for them. You provide some, you know, some snacks and sandwiches and drinks.
Yeah, food, drinks, lunch all weekend, air conditioning in that volunteer lounge, which is awesome. Volunteers also get a festival t-shirt and a limited edition bag. That's featuring our Clockwork Cafe sponsor this year. They're really cute bags. We're super excited about them and excited about that partnership. And yeah, then volunteers also get free entry to the festival all weekend. So with their volunteer credential, they can come enjoy the festival even when they're not working. And even if your shift is later in the weekend, you can still come and pick up your credential and enjoy the festival before your shift as well.
Okay. How long are the shifts typically?
3 to 4 hours about, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Kimball's sustainability efforts. I know you've got the bike valet. Right?
Yes, we have our bike valet again on 7th Street. And then we do have enhanced bus transit throughout the weekend.
Okay. And I guess what should visitors know about the festival? I mean, it's going to be a hot weekend.
It is going to be a hot weekend, so definitely bring a refillable water bottle. We have water stations at the base of Town Lift and also Miners Park. Parking is somewhat limited, as locals know, so we would definitely recommend taking the bus. That's going to be your best option for transit. We do, like I said, we have enhanced bus transit throughout the weekend, so running to and from the Park City High School. We also have Richardson Flat runs. But yeah, I think that's going to be your best option. And then, as always, sunscreen, a hat if you need it. But like I said, we do have shade areas built in throughout the festival. We also have concession trailers at the top of Main Street and at Heber. So if you need a water or a, you know, like a Powerade, something to kind of reboot you throughout the weekend, we've got you covered for that.
Yeah, can you talk to us a little bit about the artist? You'd mentioned you've got about 190 five of them.
Yeah, there's a lot this year. We definitely made a concerted effort to try to get more artists onto the street. So instead of, you know, a lot of artists having 10 by 20 booths, having more artists with the 10 by 10 booths. That was really in an effort, you know, every year, you know, we kind of have to work with the fire department and the building department to make sure that, you know, they have access to the street to make it a safe event. So we just wanted to make sure that we were still, while we might have lost a couple booths, we're still increasing the amount of artists on the street. So we're really excited to have, you know, 195 artists. They come from all across the country. I think we have a couple international artists as well this year. And they're about, I think there's about 20%, 25%. So I think that equals out to about 46 artists who are completely new to the festival. So they've never been a part of the festival before. So you'll definitely see your, you know, old favorites and some new favorites too. And then of course we have our local artists from the Wasatch Back. We also have emerging artists. And then we will be doing our Best in Show Awards at 6 p.m. on Saturday night. We'll be doing a Best in Show Award for each medium, and then an overall artist, an emerging artist, and a local artist. So not only do those artists get additional media recognition, they also get guaranteed admission, guaranteed acceptance to next year's festival.
Okay. And then I think you use a certain percentage of local artists as well?
We do. Yeah. We have a minimum of 10. I believe we have more than that this year. I can't remember off the top of my head. But we always have a minimum of 10, and that's about roughly like 7 to 10% of the artists.
Okay. And then you keep the Kimball Arts Center open during all of this as well?
Yeah, so I think we'll have reduced hours this year just because this is an all-hands-on-deck event. We have a very... You know, we have a small but mighty staff. We're about 11 people who do all of the year-round activations, events, and the festival. So we have, you know, we have operations team members that come in and help us. And then we also, of course, have our amazing volunteers that help us. But it's really just, you know, our Kimball Arts Center staff. So we'll have reduced hours, and those can be found on our website.
All right. And you mentioned, too, you've got a lot of these kind of activation areas. Mm-hmm. Does that include kind of the kids area that you usually, you know, where kids can sit? And
yeah, so that's our creation station on Heber Avenue. So your ticket includes access to all of these areas. At the creation station, we do have paid activities and free activities for everyone to enjoy. The paid activities are about like $3 or $5 each. And those just help to sustain, you know, give a take-home element to those activities. And create better quality for the creation station.
Okay. And Natalie, if somebody has a few hours to volunteer, what do they need to do to help you out?
Yeah. So if you go on the Kimball Arts Festival website, there is a tab under planning your visit about volunteering, and you'll get bumped over to our volunteer website. You'll make a little profile, give us your email and your name, and then you'll be able to see everything to sign up for.
Okay. Anything else people want to know?
I think just definitely make sure to check out our merchandise booth on the corner of Heber and Main. We have limited edition merch this year with designs from our local design contest that we do every year. And this year, actually, the winner is a previous Young Artist Academy student of ours, which is really cool. We do a blind jury process for the design contest, so no one knew that it was her design when they were voting for it. So it's just really cool to have that connection. So her name is Elle Donovan. She was the first place winner. And then Brooke Elaine, who is a illustrator based out of Salt Lake, she was the second place winner. And you can find merchandise items at our merch tent with both of those designs on them.
Okay, Hillary and Natalie, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
In the studio now with an update from last week's County Council Summit County Council presentation about the need for more space. I have the CEO of People's Health Clinic, Mari Lining. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so let's just start by you having us tell what the People's Health Clinic is, what you do, and who you serve.
Absolutely. So the People's Health Clinic provides free health care to uninsured residents of Summit and Wasatch counties. We have about 11,000 individuals who consider us to be their health care provider, and really this is the workforce that supports the economy in Park City and that makes all of our tourism and recreation possible.
All right. So you accept people from Summit and Wasatch County?
Correct.
Because that's 11,000. That's a lot.
Yeah. Like in 2025, we saw 4,200 individuals, so we don't see 11,000 in 1 year, but you don't go to your primary care doctor every single year. So we have about 11,000 active patients, meaning we've seen them within the past 3 years.
Okay. You made a presentation to the Summit County Council about where things stand and what you're looking for going forward. I mean, we've heard that you're out of space and you're working from storage closets, I guess. So what's changed? I mean, is it just mostly an influx of new folks?
Well, what's changed is between 2009 when we moved into the building and this year, we've grown 375%. We used to do about 4,500 patient encounters a year, and last year we did 21,448. So that's in the same footprint. The health department has been kind to let us use space in other areas of the building on some days of the week, but really we are looking to ensure that the clinic can serve our community members in need in a reliable space.
All right. So the numbers are increasing just because fewer people have health insurance?
I mean, part of it is just the growth of our community, right? Just the massive expansion in Summit and Wasatch counties over this past 15 years. We take care of the workforce. The workforce supports the town. The town has grown. That's part of it. Although, you know, we're expecting a 20 to 25% increase this year and next based on the discontinuation of the Affordable Care Act subsidies at the end of 2025, as well as the impending changes to Medicaid that will take place in January 2027. So we are bracing for an increase in uninsured community members.
Yeah, we certainly know about the Affordable Care Act subsidies being lost, and you saw an influx in that. What's happening with the Medicaid requirements?
This is all part of the big, beautiful bill, and it's been estimated that at a minimum, 40,000 Utahns could lose their coverage under this change set for January 2027. It just makes it a lot more difficult to qualify for Medicaid, to stay enrolled in Medicaid, to actually fill out the applications. It the number of hoops you have to jump through to be able to receive Medicaid are so many that it really starts to become almost impractical for individuals, especially those with low health literacy, to navigate that system.
Yeah. Looking through the screens that you have provided to the county council in the report, you're asking the county basically to treat health care the same way that it provides residents with affordable housing and free transit. you just don't feel like you're getting the same kind of support that we're seeing with those others?
Well, it's interesting. Just on a community-wide level, I feel like housing is often talked about as essential infrastructure, which it is, transportation. But healthcare as a topic is not often on the table. And it really is absolutely essential that our community members and our workforce have got access to healthcare. You know, we are considered infrastructure from a documentation standpoint, like the community health assessment that was published by the county in 2025 lists us as infrastructure and actually shows that about 10% of respondents come to us as their care provider. So I just want to shift the conversation countywide to really include healthcare, and that's us, and it's also other nonprofit entities that provide healthcare in town, as well as Intermountain Health, the University of Utah. There are many of us, and we are absolutely essential to our community's well-being. I mean, there's no better illustration of that than what happened with the COVID pandemic in 2020, 2021. You know, we are all in this together when it comes to the health of our community.
Yeah, and we know that space will be opening at the Quinns Junction facility there where People's Health Clinic is located along with the Summit County Health Department. So how much space do you need? And I guess how much space are you actually asking for?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So we're currently in a footprint of 5,000 square feet that are, you know, considered our own. Based on a ground lease that was written in 2008, and it's good for 40 years, between Summit County and Intermountain Health, the People's Health Clinic is one of two named tenants for the building. It's us and the Summit County Health Department, and it's written into the ground lease that the People's Health Clinic can flex up to 12,500 square feet in the building. Again, this building was created with the intention to be a public health hub, understanding the importance of the People's Health Clinic as well as the health department, and it was written intended to support growth. The fact that we can expand now, you know, as supported by this ground lease is really because the Summit County Health Department has chosen to move 18 staff members over to the new Peak building. So we are asking for what the ground lease should give us, and that is more space to care for our uninsured community members.
So up to 12,500.
Correct.
How big is the building?
It's 25,000 square feet. Yeah, there's a lot of room in there.
So that would be half.
Correct. It would be half. And, you know, at this time, we are really focused on securing permanent access to the WIC suite. That's the Women, Infants, and Children suite. That's the federal nutrition program. With the Summit County Health Department moving administrative offices over to Peak, they're going to be moving WIC upstairs. And we would love access permanently to that downstairs space because it actually has two pediatric clinical exam rooms with sinks and plumbing, four additional offices, and a waiting area that's safe for children. It's also actually where we're running pediatrics right now. So the fact that we were able to expand and hire a pediatrician this year is because Jennifer Bateman, the WIC director, as well as Phil Bondurant, allowed us to use the WIC space on Wednesdays and Thursdays when WIC is not operating in there. So honestly, if that were to go away, I'm not sure where pediatrics goes. And it's also important to note, we are actually in there under our own memorandum of agreement with the county, although that does expire in December.
Yeah, so the WIC suite, is that about 7,500 square feet?
No, I think it's, I've heard everywhere from 800 to 1,200. I don't know exactly how many square feet that is. The county has also said that we can have continual access to the conference room, which we use regularly for, you know, public informational sessions as well as our staff meetings. And then there are two exam rooms that we have shared access to now that they're going to let us have continual access to. So that will all be incredibly helpful. But really what we need is additional space to that, you know, over what we have access to now and knowing that we have it in a reliable way.
All right. Well, let's spend another minute on that ground lease. And I guess I'm kind of confused. Why is IHC part of this?
So Intermountain Health owns the land under the building. And part of this 2008 lease is they give the county the use of this land at $1 a year with the requirement that the People's Health Clinic under a sublease also has $1 a year rent to the county to be in the building. And then the original intention of this building was for a partnership between the Summit County Health Department, the People's Health Clinic, and also Intermountain Health. Something that's been really a wonderful surprise of the past 3 months is I've had several original negotiators for this ground lease, you know, people who are on the board at the People's Health Clinic around 2008, people involved with the creation of the Intermountain Park City Hospital at that time. And they've expressed their surprise and concern that our recent negotiations for more space didn't actually really start with an acknowledgement of this ground lease that they worked so hard on. So it's been interesting to learn about this piece of history, the importance of the collaboration, and just the intent of this shared building.
So I'm speaking with the county manager. He had called this a county building, but really the county is only a tenant?
Yeah, so the way that this was all structured is Intermountain Health said you can use the land. The county paid for the building, but for this to be affordable to the county as well as the People's Health Clinic, which at the time was actually originally, I think, offered to build on the land, but we were a very small entity at the time. The idea was that these three organizations in a shared partnership could make a public health hub possible.
All right. So it sounds like you have more volunteer providers who could help expand the clinic, but you just don't have anywhere to put them?
Yeah, we do. We actually have a waiting list of volunteer physicians, and it is so hard to tell a volunteer physician, thank you, you're on our waiting list, especially because, depending on the specialty, we've got a 2 to 10 week wait for our patients. So we have the providers ready to start. We have the patients who need the help. We're just trying to secure space that they can operate. So again, if we were given, you know, 5-day-a-week use of this WIC space, we would immediately not only expand our pediatric program further, but utilize these volunteer providers.
All right. And I remember what was so important about People's Health Clinic when it was just kind of getting off its ground is that many of these patients actually used to just show up at the local emergency room. Emergency rooms are basically required to treat somebody who walks through their doors.
Yeah. And this is a great policy called EMTALA that says anyone who shows up needing care will get care in the United States.
Yeah, so this is, having the People's Health Clinic is actually a money saver for all of those of us, I suppose, who pay for insurance, huh?
It is. I mean, it is countywide. We have an incredible partnership with Intermountain Health. Because of their support, our $3.8 million budget is really us providing more than $7 million of free care a year, because they give us access to free laboratory studies, radiology studies, to subspecialty services that we don't have under our roof. They do this understanding that we do keep people out of the emergency department, that we're keeping our community healthy. I mean, really, the People's Health Clinic saves lives, and that's why it is so very important that we have the space we need to operate.
Okay, and we've got just a couple minutes here, so we're going to run through this. So the county has an agreement with another nonprofit that also needs space, Jackie's Recovery System Services. You've made it very clear this is not an us versus them situation, but how is this kind of being troublesome, I suppose, as you try to take more space?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do feel like Jackie's has unfortunately been sort of caught in the middle of this. My thought is we really need to start with the original ground lease. It's a county document, and work from there. It's ultimately up to Intermountain Health who they choose to allow in the building. The way it's written right now, the People's Health Clinic is the only nonprofit medical entity that is allowed in the building without Intermountain's explicit written approval. You know what I can say with Jackie's is they're a great organization. In fact, there's so many wonderful nonprofits in Park City right now that are really struggling for space. I've had a total of 5 reach out to me wondering if there's going to be additional space in the building for them, and 2 of them are also mental health nonprofits. So there are 3 mental health nonprofits in Park City currently looking for a place that they can rely on. And in all three of these situations, they've got different locations, like Salt Lake City, Park City. It's a good argument for having a nonprofit health hub that all of these entities can share for the days that they're up in Park City.
Okay. Real quick, I want to get to the fact that you are hosting your annual fundraiser, Walk and Wine. That's coming up Sunday. Theme is Rising to Meet Extraordinary Need. You still have tickets available?
We do. We have some spots available. We are going to be closing tickets tomorrow. So if you do want a ticket, today is the day you can get one. If you go to peopleshealthclinic.org, our ticket purchasing site will pop up for you. We'd love to see you there. It's really an amazing day to celebrate our community's belief that all people deserve healthcare access.
Okay, how much are you hoping to raise?
I don't like to put a limit on these things. So okay. We're going to go as big as we can.
Okay. All right. Maury, anything else?
No, Leslie, thank you so much for your time. It's always great to see you. And so thank you.
All right. Thank you. Maury Lining is the CEO of People's Health Clinic. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City.